Let me repeat that tantalising snippet I gave you at the beginning of the program, that in 1990, Prime Minister Hawke announced that his government wanted to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 20% of 1988 levels by the year 2005. How extraordinary. How wonderful. What the hell went wrong? Maria Taylor has been wondering exactly what occurred, and she's written the book that I mentioned with that impressive title. She now joins us from our Canberra studio to explain it all. Maria, welcome. What brought you to the story? I know that you and I and Barry Jones and all sorts of others were involved in this debate at the time, but I'd almost forgotten that extraordinary announcement of Bob's.
Bob's?
Hawks.
Oh, that Bob. Okay. What brought me to... thanks for inviting me, Philip. What brought me to this story was I was doing a PhD or looking for a PhD topic, and I knew there had been a lot of political interference with climate change communication in the United States. I started wondering what the Australian situation was. So I started looking at the historical, what was on the documentary record, basically, which was turned out to be heaps of newspaper articles and public government documents from the late 80s and early 90s, which...
What should remind us is that really the anti-science rhetoric that is so deafening these days wasn't around at the time.
Well, exactly. That is very true. Which was really, well, for various reasons, but primarily because the other side, the fossil fuel lobby, the fossil fuel industry, didn't really get organised until about 1992. The record shows then at around that time they started developing the narrative. I mean, I talk about the fact that basically there was a narrative, an early narrative from the 1980s, and then that really changed, and that the whole thing is largely a communication story, really.
And it was a communication story where even the descriptive term kept changing, which also helped confuse the issue. You know, greenhouse effect, back in the 80s, that was being widely debated. It morphs into global warming. Down the track, it will become perhaps the less scary climate change. So was this deliberate management of language?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I have no evidence that it was. I mean, countries have known about the greenhouse effect since the 60s, the 70s, and certainly in the 80s. It's a term of, describing what greenhouse gas emissions do.
It goes back to the late 19th century. It had been around a hell of a long time.
Well, that's right. You know, if you want to talk about it from a scientific point of view, it's been around for, as you say, since the late 19th century, and there's a whole story about the science discovery of global warming and then rapid global warming. And yes, there's a debate about whether we should be calling it the greenhouse effect or global warming and climate change. But there's probably not a great deal of percentage in arguing about that.
Because I know you record the two major climate change conferences. There was CSIRO in 87 and our Commission for the Future in 1988. And at that time, there was bipartisan support.
Yes, exactly. And, I mean, let me tell you a little bit about the 1980 story then, which leads to that, to those two conferences. So at that time, as you probably know, not the 1980s story, but the late 1980s and early 1990s story, when Australia in fact had a draft emission reduction target of 20% below 1988 levels by 2005. So if we'd acted then, we would have had a much lower target to achieve than we have now, which is very steep. And we've been growing emissions as a result for 25 years. And it's not only us, a similar story applies to other Western English-speaking countries who went through much the same arc of kind of understanding and then burying. But in those early days, there were literally hundreds of newspaper articles that show that up until Keating took over from Hawke and got well established, so about till 1992, there was a really minimal fight back, and as you say exactly, it was bipartisan. It wasn't a fight between Labor and the Coalition. And all the solutions we talk about today were on the table, as you know, efficiency, fuel substitution, jobs in new renewable industries, emission trading, and a price on carbon. So did you want to talk about those conferences?
Not in particular, but simply to make the point that after our Commission for the Future conference, we got a United Nations award, and you do quote from a book which talks about the awareness of the greenhouse issues being greater amongst the general public in Australia than in any other country in the world. And now here we are sitting decades later, and I would have thought the awareness has probably diminished or at least been totally blurred and confused.
Well, that is in fact what happened, but it was a deliberate a strategy campaign or change of narrative that was deliberately confused, or the people became deliberately confused. That 1989 book, by the way, came out after those two conferences and the second one, and I noted that you were actually the commission chair of the Commission for the Future at that time. Is that right?
Yeah.
So you know this story very well from that time.
What happens in 1991 when Keating challenges for the Labor leadership? Significant?
In terms of this story?
In terms of this story.
Yes.
Because you're critical of Paul.
Yeah, that is true. In the sense, in the context of his interest in this topic. I mean, all my informants, the insiders I talked to, said that Paul was, that Keating was, you know, this was not an interest of his. They described it as either he didn't care or it was low on his agenda, unlike Hawke and Richardson, interestingly enough, as you will recall, who...
This is Graham Richardson.
Richardson, who these days is hardly credited as an environmental champion.
He was bloody good in that role for a while.
He was, and you know, he saved the Daintree, and you know, because he had those sort of what do they call them?
Well, he had political skills, actually.
Yeah,
he was a good head kicker.
Yes, and so what happened afterwards? It's about that time when Keating got fairly well established by 1992, and they'd had the Rio summit, and Ros Kelly and John Kerin went to it, and that's when the Rio summit was, you know, the beginning of all those conferences that ended up with Kyoto in 1997, and so this established the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change at that time. Science Minister Barry Jones, former science minister already by that time, told a 1992 World Meteorological Day address that I think this is really interesting because we forget that green issues were actually extremely important in the 1980s and contributed to Labor victories in 83, 87 and 1990, which we tend to forget that there was a constituency there. It wasn't just a cynical political ploy to care about climate change.
Maria, unfortunately, because we started a little late, we're now out of time, and say thank you for yours. Global warming and climate change, what Australia knew and buried, then framed a new reality for the public. Oh, it's published by ANU. You can get a hard copy through them or download a free copy of the book to your e-reader, and we'll put a link on our website. And now, a little bit of music, and I'll introduce you to a young fella called Minchin.